You're tuned in to JTV Podcast with Jasmine Anderson. I have a special phenomenal guest, Mr. Matthew Knowles, which he is the founder of Music World Entertainment, talent manager, and businessman. He is known for being the manager of Destiny's Child. He also managed his daughters, Beyonce and Solange Knowles, and so many more artists. Right now, he has been doing awesome. He is the best-selling author of The DNA of Achievers, 10 Traits of Highly Successful People, and Racism from the Eyes of a Child. He is also a professor and a public speaker. I don't believe there's anything that he doesn't do. You are a very, very busy individual, Mr. Knowles.
Hey, Jasmine. How are you today, Jasmine?
Good. How are you feeling?
Well, it's a beautiful day in Houston. You know, it's every day, as you know, you don't know if it's hot or cold.
You really don't.
The last 2 days, I had a sweater yesterday, and it was 78 degrees. I thought it was going to be cold, and then it was foggy.
Now we're drinking tea.
It was foggy the day before, and it was freezing the day before that. So, hey, this is great weather that we have. Thank you for the great introduction.
Oh, you're welcome. And I'm in your office right now. This has just been beautiful. I want to do this interview about you. This is about Matthew Knowles. I would like to talk about your journey starting back in 1976.
Going in 76? What happened in 76?
Or before you started and before you founded Music World Entertainment.
I moved to Houston.
Yeah, I want to know about your journey. Yeah,
December 6, 1976.
Exactly,
and
yes.
And guess what? I was lost on 610 for about 3 hours.
Oh, my goodness.
The reason why I even moved to Houston is Tennessee State. Mm-hmm. Played Texas Southern, and I graduated from Fisk, which is right down the street from Tennessee State, in 74.
Yes.
And I was working with AT&T in Nashville, and three of my frat brothers, I'm on Omega Psi Phi.
Yes.
I showed you some of that.
I know, awesome.
And three of my frat brothers, we came up to Nashville, drove up to Houston from Nashville, and I had never been here.
Wow.
And I saw all of the buildings and all of my frat brothers living large.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wait a minute, that guy's not even as smart as me. So, you know, back in 76, it was a period of time in corporate America, mm-hmm. That quotas of black people, these
yes.
major companies had to make. And it was extremely difficult in Houston.
Uh-huh.
And so if you had a degree and could walk and talk, you were almost guaranteed a job if you were black.
Okay.
In these major corporations.
And you were definitely doing smart. You were in the medical field. You were.
Well, I started out, though. My first job here was with Pitney Bowes.
Okay.
With the milling equipment. And I literally worked with Lanier Business Products and Pitney Bowes for a month. Because you used to get these big folders you would read.
Wow. Yes.
Because I'm a sales guy.
Uh-huh.
And I came up with this bright idea. If they're going to pay me for a month to read at my apartment, I'll just get two jobs.
Yeah.
And then I'll decide which one I like the best.
Yes.
So I did that. I worked at Lanier Business Products and Pitney Bowes at the same time for a month.
Mm-hmm.
And then I decided to work with Pitney Bowes. And then from there, I got a job with Xerox.
Yes, that's
in 1978.
Uh-huh.
And then in 1980, I got a promotion to Xerox Medical Systems.
Mm-hmm.
And then for the next 18 years, worked in and selling diagnostic imaging.
I know. I thought that was amazing. And then in 1992, you just left that career and devoted yourself fully to the music company, which was what we have now, where we're sitting in this amazing building. Music World Entertainment was founded, which was in 1992. And
well, actually, a couple of things you missed.
Oh, look.
So in 1982, we started, my former wife and I, we started a business together called Hair International.
Oh.
And Headliners Hair Salon. And we owned Headliners Hair Salon, which became the number one black female hair salon in Houston by far in the 80s. All kind of celebrities would come there.
Get their hair done.
Get their hair done. And so it was actually in 1985 that I made my first $1 million. And
wow.
It was at the hair salon.
Okay.
In 1985. And we did well. We did very well with the hair salon business.
Yes.
Over the years. Then in 92, when I opened Music World, I had two companies. I had Music World, and then I had Hair International. And I ran those both. That was a hairstyling book for a year. But I still was in corporate America, though. I was still a medical salesman.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
So I didn't leave corporate America until around 1995, 96.
Oh, officially. Okay.
Because I went from selling zero radiography. We were the leading modality for breast cancer detection. I went from that, and in 1988, I went to Philips, where I was one of the first black MRI and CT scanner. I was a sales specialist for MRI and CT scanners. And then in 93, 94, somewhere in there, I worked with Johnson & Johnson as a neurosurgical specialist, so working with neurosurgeons. So, you know, I've worked in the hair industry.
Worked
in corporate America, been in the medical field. But these are highly intellectual-based, passion-driven kind of positions that I've been fortunate to have and be a part of.
Yes.
You can't talk to a neurosurgeon. You've got to have a certain intellect to do that.
You really do. And that's what amazed me when I found that out about you. I was like, wow, you were selling some high tech. You was in the medical field. So to me, I was curious about the fact that you put, you know, I feel like you went towards your dream, what you found it, the Music World Entertainment. And so that was my question about what made you go towards that starting foundation.
Well, I don't know if you're old enough to understand this word called managed care and health. You know, have you heard that?
Yes.
So managed care means that when you go to a doctor or you go to the hospital, that there's a dollar amount that they have set, the insurance companies have set aside for a procedure. So if you, I don't know, had a broken arm and you went to the emergency room, there's X amount of dollars that the insurance company is going to pay for your broken arm. And what that does is makes the hospital reduce, you know, how much time they spend with you and how many drugs they give you and what type of cast they put on your broken arm. And so it makes them reduce their costs, because if they're only getting, say, $1,000, they can't spend $1,500 on you.
Yeah, that's true.
And that's called managed care. And so in 85, you know, that's when managed care came into the business. And I was at a surgical procedure at Methodist Hospital. And after the procedure, the surgeon paged me. And when I went to his office, he simply said he couldn't use my technology anymore because it cost too much.
Oh, my goodness.
And that's the moment that all my passion left. And I had only given myself 20 years I was going to be in corporate America. So it was time for me to identify my passion. Well, because I believe when you live your passion, you never work a day in your life.
Yeah,
so
that's
I
true.
Have to think about what is it that Matthew Knowles really, really, really enjoy and would enjoy. And as a kid, and when you read Racism from the Eyes of a Child, you realize that things like I, for Christmas Mass at the Catholic school I went to at the church, I sang the solo part of Old Holy Night. Or that in high school I was in a boy group, you know. But I did a little music in my day as growing up, and I love music. And it seemed exciting. At the same time, Beyonce had this group she was in called Girls' Time.
Yeah.
I didn't pay a lot of attention to it because I was just a dad taking her and dropping her off.
Yeah.
But they lost on Star Search. And, you know, as a father to see my kid and the rest of the little girls, they were little. I mean, they were like 9, 10, 11 years old. To see them boohoo.
Crying,
you know, it touched
it,
me. So I was like, what can I do? And I asked Ed McMahon, and he said, the groups that do well on, the artists that do well on Star Search, every week they win, they never professionally do anything. But it's the ones that fail and go back and change their organization and rededicate and refocus. Those are the ones that seem to do well. And he named out some groups like the group that was on Boys to Men, the group that
NSYNC?
No, the group Boyz II Men.
Oh, Boyz II Men, yes.
They performed on Star Search. But when they lost, they had to change the organization. And
wow.
The same members that were on the initial group of Boyz II Men on Star Search is not the Boyz II Men that we all know.
Wow.
Some different people.
Yeah.
So
and they switched it up.
That's what I did. I went back to school. I believe in education. You'll see a common thread in me is education.
I love that.
I really believe in knowing your stuff.
Researching all of it.
And all of it.
I agree.
And critical thinking. And so I went back to school. And something that I hope the listeners understand is that you don't get success easily. And I went to every seminar that I could, Jasmine, that was on the music industry.
Wow.
And if you know, I paid. It was a sacrifice, but
yes.
I wanted to learn it. I didn't want to be in it. I wanted to be someone that was an impact player, not
yes.
someone on the sideline. So I built relationships, which is the other key thing in success, is building relationships.
Building relationships.
You have to know your stuff. You have to build relationships. You have to build a team. All of those things are what success is about.
Okay. No, that's really good. And you have put a mark on history, I feel like, in the entertainment business. You have set the bar. Would you say that all the things that you've accomplished, did you see it before it happened? Or were you surprised along the way?
No, never surprised. Never surprised. Strategic.
Wow.
The difference.
Okay.
And yes, I saw it ahead of time because we had to do the strategy to get to it. And we had to put in the work to get to that success.
Yes.
And you have to have a strategy.
I like that strategy.
Planning to fail failure to plan is planning to fail. If you don't plan, planning is just putting a strategy together. If you don't plan, it will fail.
Oh, I like that. You definitely have to plan. No, I totally agree.
Yeah.
And have your vision and everything strategic. Oh, I like that. And work
ethic. And that's what the DNA of Achievers is all about. You know, it talks about those 10 traits of highly successful professionals. And it starts with passion.
Yes, I did love that.
And then, because if you're not passionate, excited, you know, if you're not passionate about it, then the second trait is work ethics.
Yes.
And they coexist. You can't have one without the other. You won't
work
find someone with, man, that person really got high work ethics. Yeah, it's because they're very passionate about what they do. And so you have to have those two things. But it start with this thing called passion. I'm doing it because I'm passionate. Not doing it because I want to make money. Eventually, yes,
you
I want to make money. But that's where it all starts.
I agree. I like that. So what would you say are some key points that make up good work ethic?
The three points I would say that when we talk about work ethics, we already said passion being one of those. But
yes.
The other part of it is preparation, being prepared. And you have to research. We used that word earlier. That's part of work ethics. Part of work ethics is being on time.
Oh, that's true.
Is really important.
I agree.
Again, it just so ties into passion. See, to me, if I see someone with great work ethics, they're going to stay until the job is done.
They're not going to be trying to get out earlier, a few mornings earlier.
It's
yeah.
It's 5 o'clock and it's
yeah,
time
totally
for me to
agree.
Go. That's not someone with work ethics. That's someone that's being paid by the hour.
I agree.
Someone with work ethics just want to get the job done and whatever it takes to get it done, much time that it takes, how much work that it takes, research, they're going to do it regardless. That's what, for me, the three things that show me you have work ethics.
Okay. I like that. And so on your journey this far, what would you say has been the most valuable learning lesson?
There's been a lot of them. You know, when you're a risk taker, which is another trait in the DNA of Achievers, you're going to make mistakes. and you're going to have failure, which is another chapter in DNA of Achiever, learning from failure. So when you are doing that and you're a risk taker, you're going to have some failures. And so when you ask that question, what have been some of the challenges, right?
Mm-hmm.
Along the journey, that's why I said it's been many, because there's been many risks that I've taken and some of them didn't work. But I've always looked at mistakes and failure. I've always looked at it as an opportunity for me to grow and not a reason for me to quit.
Yes.
Some people, they quit when they make mistakes or have challenges. So I can't just pinpoint and say this particular one was mm-hmm. the biggest one.
Yeah,
there's been a number of them that
constantly
have
learning.
Molded me,
yes.
That's helped mold me, and has helped mold Music World Entertainment, our company, has helped mold our artists into better people, better artists, better managers, better entrepreneurs.
That's true. That's true. So what are the five things you feel are important? Like you said, you've been there for your children, things like that. What do you feel like are the most important things that you've instilled or that's important to instill in a child?
Well, so we're not talking now as an artist. We're talking as a parent.
Yes.
We're not instilling artistry to artists. But I think the most important thing is that you have to have good parents. I think what we have instilled, and we being my former wife Tina,
mm-hmm.
What we instilled in Solange, Beyonce, and Kelly, because Kelly lived with us from
yeah.
I think 11 years old until like 25, you know, 26 when everybody moved out. So we always looked at her as a daughter. So. But, you know, with Beyonce and Solange, they were younger. So, you know, how you impact the 11-year-old is different than how you impact the 3-year-old.
Wow. Yes.
But I think because we had the number one hair salon, and I think because I was the number one sales rep at Xerox Medical Systems, that we instilled into our kids a sense of confidence that they could do it because they saw their parents be the very best. I mean, think about that. Your dad's the number one sales rep worldwide. Your mama has got the number one hair salon in Houston, making $1 million doing it.
It's like there's nothing you can't do.
Yeah, I think we instilled that. I think we instilled, going back to the failures and mistakes, we never hid those from my kids. We instilled that when that does happen, it makes you a better person. Don't hide from it. Don't run from it. Embrace it and say, okay, what did I learn from this failure?
Yes.
What did I learn from this mistake? I think we instilled a sense of teamwork that, you know, we always, at our house and home, we showed our kids that it required teamwork. And I think we instill that word passion,
yeah.
and that word work ethics. I think we instill those things in our kids. But again, confidence that they could, we instill that there's nothing
That's
you
important.
Can't do. And we gave them support. You know, I always tell everybody this. Had Beyonce or Solange came to me and said, hey, Dad, because I used to always ask them, what do you want to be when you grow up? What do you want to be when you grow up? You know, and a singer. But had they said that I want to be a doctor, then listen to me closely what I'm going to say. If they, Beyonce or Solange, had said they wanted to be a doctor, then I would have said, go to med school.
Yes.
And then decide which part of medicine you want to do that you're passionate about. But by the time you get out of med school, which by the time you go to med school, do your residency, and then you do fellow after that, it's about 14 years.
Wow.
And I have said to them, that gives Dad 14 years to buy a hospital.
Uh-huh.
And when they became a doctor, we would have owned a hospital. And wow. They wouldn't have had to work for anybody because it would have been our hospital.
Yes.
That's okay. The kind of dad I was and am.
You are. You are a great dad. And the fact that you've instilled that, like you said, confidence, that is key to instilling your kids that you can do anything. You know, let them know, like...
Well, somebody told Obama he could be president. Somebody instilled that into him, that he could be president one day. You and I never even thought we'd see a black president.
I know.
Somebody had to instill that in him.
That's true. Hey, you guys, you have to instill greatness in your kids and confidence. So I totally agree with that. And
let me tell you, here's the word that just today at our New Year's Eve... toast. I'm gonna say it now.
Okay.
you know, there's a lot of people that have been blessed and have the gratitude to have been extremely great and have shown greatness.
Yes.
And I think once you've been instilled with this greatness, that it's your responsibility to find and instill greatness in other people. So I know my goal for next year is to instill greatness in other people.
Not
being average, not being good, but instill greatness in them. That's a different thing, greatness.
It is. And to tap into that, you know, this greatness inside of all of us. So I totally agree to bring that out. Oh, that's really good. And so life gets rough. I mean, everybody has their ups and their downs. What would you say separates a successful person from a non-successful person?
Well, I mean, I still sound redundant.
No, I know a lot of what you said does make up that, you know, from parenting and all of that.
You know, passion. Again, I'm going to talk about this DNA of Achievers. I hope people,
you need to get this book, you guys, DNA of Achievers.
They might learn something. And I would think that your audience is predominantly black, right? I'm asking you.
It might be a mixture.
No, but predominantly.
Predominantly, yes.
Yeah, majority. Because the way black people think sometimes, and I grew up with white people, and it's different. I have to say, because I went to all white schools.
Yeah.
And so when I intellectualize... you know, black people get very emotional, tremendous amount of jealousy involved. And it's not like that the same kind of way with white people. So I find myself in two different worlds.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's the world that I live in with black people, and there's the world that I live in with white people. And it's very interesting. And
just their mindset.
Well, it's just interesting. The more I'm talking now, I'm thinking, that's a book, The Two Worlds of Black and White. I like that title I just came up with. The Two Worlds of Black and White. So the 10th trait in DNA of Achievers is thinking outside the box.
Yes.
And one of those steps to being great and being successful is that you don't do it the same way that everybody else does. Average person will. They'll do it like everybody else.
Follow a certain guy.
And that's because, when I give my seminars, I actually get a box.
Okay.
And I ask one person in the audience to come get in the box.
Mm-hmm.
And then once they're in the box, I ask them to get someone else. They get to pick the person they want to be in the box with them.
Wow.
And they pick someone, it typically is a friend or somebody they know. And then I ask them to get in a box and ask them to move around in a box. And when these two people in the box, it's very difficult to move around in this box. And I ask them why. And they said, it's because we have all of these walls that we have in this box.
Wow.
And I said, you're right, because... And I give them a new name. I like to give new definitions. I said, you know, right now you're a box-end thinker. And probably 95% of the world are box-end thinkers.
Mm-hmm.
And box-end thinkers are people that have been conditioned. And And unfortunately, black people, because of racism and we've been conditioned to fail. And our young people, especially with social media, have been conditioned to fail. And so when you're a box-in thinker, you hear messages like, you'll never be able to accomplish this. You hear those messages. Wow. Or what do people think of me? Or I'm black, I can't ever do this. Or I'm a female, I can't ever do this. Or I'm gay, I can't ever do this. You literally hear these messages that were told to you when you were a little child. And that you still hear them today. And again, you're going to have inside of that box someone who thinks just like you. That's who you're going to pick out of this room of 1,000 people.
Yes.
You're going to pick that one person that's a box-in thinker like you. So if you're a hater, then you're going to pick someone that's a hater. If you're not smart, you're going to pick someone that's not smart. Highly genius. You're going to pick someone that's a highly genius person. And they say the difference is we have no restrictions. We have no walls. And unfortunately, people that are not successful, they always have restrictions. They always have walls. They're always the victim. They never accept responsibility. They never want to work hard for it. They want it given to them. They never want to get more education. That's a trait of an unsuccessful person. And because I own a company, I can identify that immediately.
And you can see that.
And I can see that. And so even like, it's my belief that when you hear on the social media platform a lot of negativities, I'm not sure these are intellectually smart people. That are commenting. I'm just being very honest with you. I'm not sure they're very intellectually smart. I think they have a lot of time on their hand because you
just don't feed into it.
You won't find people. First of all, you're not going to find successful people, who even spend this massive amount of time on social media. And I'll tell you what you're not going to find. You find a highly successful person. They don't give a shit what people are saying about them. Not a little bit. They don't give a shit about it. Because those people are never going to get to sit in this room where you are. They're never going to have this opportunity of this moment, this time and place, to sit in this room and engulf all the greatness of the photos around
you guys
of Earth, Wind & Fire and OJ's and
all these beautiful awards. I mean,
and Quincy Jones and Muhammad Ali and Trinity 5-7, Destiny Child, and Salon's Beyonce.
I mean, the energy is so real.
They'll never be able to be a part of this.
Yeah.
Never will they.
Yeah.
And so you don't care about that. Why do I care?
You're like, okay.
They don't pay the rent here.
That's true. You're like, so why would I even give in to that?
I don't.
I agree.
It's just not that important to me. No, there's a marketing side of all this.
Mm-hmm.
And all of us that have had experience in marketing, we see opportunities, even in these negative comments, to market something.
That's true.
And it's sometimes
publicity.
Unfortunate.
Some people try to do it to get publicity as well.
Yeah, but sometimes, unfortunately, I won't even go there.
Okay, so I know you're a professor, a teacher. You teach courses on entertainment industry in the School of Communication. So being professor, I know there's highs and lows, but the importance of sharing and teaching the youth about the business, what you've done, and you have courses online, things like that. Why do you feel like it was important to give back to the youth being a professor?
Well, first of all, I've been fortunate. I haven't had many lows.
Okay.
As a professor.
That's good.
The only time I get a low is when my students don't show up for class or they're late for class.
Okay.
That's something that's very, very high on my do not piss off professor Knowles by being late.
Yes, I agree.
Because he will call you out. But other than that, I've had many, 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 many highs. And to see my students go on to be successful You know, I've been a teacher many, many years. When I was at Xerox Corporation, I used to train new sales reps.
Wow.
Because I was fortunate to be so successful. They asked me to train new sales reps. So I trained a whole lot of salespeople.
Wow.
You know, as a mentor for a lot of young men in the music industry, I've been able to be a mentor, which is to me teaching. And I've been a mentor to some kids, I call them kids, but to some young men now that are highly successful. Troy Carter, I don't know if that name rings a bell for you, but I bought Troy's company and Julius Irvin the III, Dr. J's son.
Uh-huh.
I bought their company in 2002, paid $2 million, made them both a millionaire. Paid $2 million for their company. And Troy went on to be on... gosh, what's a TV show that they with entrepreneurs presenting their product, and then they decide on Shark Tank. So Troy was on Shark Tank. Troy went on to be the manager of Lady Gaga.
Wow.
In the height of her success. Now Troy is like the number three person at one of the largest streaming companies that we have today. And so I've had that opportunity to mentor, teach. In 2007, I used to live between New York and Houston in 2002 to 2008. And in 2007 and 2008, I used to fly to Nashville on a Sunday. I would teach Monday at Fisk University and then fly back to New York. And I did it for free for 2 years.
Wow.
And then 9 years ago, I was asked, because they had put together this entertainment program at Texas Southern University called ERM. And the ERM stands for Entertainment Recording Industry Management.
I like that.
And so that is the degree you actually get in ERM. And I've watched their program go from, I don't know, 10, 15 students to the day we have about 175 students.
Oh, my goodness.
And it's growing. But I've been fortunate also to teach in the School of Business at Texas Southern. For 3 years, I taught entrepreneurship. Now I'm, you know, and at the same time, I was teaching the School of Communications, the ERM.
Yes.
The last 3 years, I've been fortunate to teach every other semester. In grad school, I teach media entrepreneurship.
And that's right in my field, so yeah, that's awesome.
For grad school. And,
yeah.
And you know, my classes are large. They range between 30 and 50 students. And the classes are always 5:30 in the afternoon to 8 o'clock. So I have a 2.5-hour class. So I have to be on top of my game as a professor. I have to be able to keep you from getting bored and keep you from yawning.
I have to learn, yes.
I have to entertain during that 2.5-hour period, because I've learned that you've got to entertain and educate at the same time. And then we're announcing e-learning, which is online education, continuing education. This is not getting a degree. This is to learn something.
Yes.
Some people don't want to get a college degree to learn how to be a manager. They want to take it. They just want to learn that. Or they want to know how to put together a business plan. They just want to learn how to put together a business plan.
That's true.
That's a focus of ours in 2018 is e-learning, continuing education. So you'll hear more about the Knowles Institute for Entrepreneurship, Entertainment, and Music Business. And also the Matthew Knowles Institute will be, we're focused on talking to all historical black universities. We are fortunate to start at Texas Southern, and it'll be launched and announced in the first quarter of next year, 2018. We're excited about that. I think I showed you that, what it looks like. So we're excited. We're excited a lot about 2018.
2018, like it's here. It is here. What would you say is one of your normal routines when you wake up? Like, I feel like successful people have like a different routine in their day, like things that they do.
Well, I'll wake up between 4 a.m. and 6 a.m. And sometimes when I wake up at 4 a.m. and my brain starts, I just get up because I'm just going to lay there, you know, and I'm going to start thinking. And once I turn that think tank on, I can't turn it off.
Okay.
And then sometimes I, and it's seldom, but sometimes I say, hey, I'm going to try to turn this off and I'm going to take a nap. And,
yes.
You know, but I get up early. I get up early. I first thing I do is make me some hot tea. And then I go work out for the most part.
Okay.
You know, I work out 30 minutes. Make my breakfast. You know, I love boiled eggs. That's a pretty standard thing. 4 boiled eggs that I do, and then I take the yolk out of them, and I eat that, and then I, you know, take my shower, get dressed, kiss my wife goodbye, and call downstairs for them to bring my car up. And I go to the post office, check my mail, which is 5 minutes away from where we live. And then I come to the office. And in between there, I'm checking. First thing, also, when I get up, one of the first things I do after I get my hot tea is look at my emails and text messages.
Okay. You like breakfast things?
That's my routine.
Okay. Like, hey, that 4 o'clock, though, is probably the difference in some people just, you know, just sitting there laying in bed.
Yeah, that's when I'm like...
You're like, it's time to work.
Thinking through or going through emails. Or fortunately, one of my partners live in Halifax, Canada, so he's 2 hours away. And then I'm having some conversations in London, and those guys are 6 hours away. So I can literally... at 4 o'clock, talk to someone in London.
Okay.
Because, you know, we do a lot of international stuff. One of the key to all what music world, the success is our international influence. We've sold more records outside of America. You know how successful we are in America.
Oh, my goodness.
We've sold more music outside of America. I did a reality show with MTV International that never even aired in America. It aired in 41 countries outside of America.
Wow.
I've done 2 reality shows, one in the UK that never aired in America. So
like
again,
you're global. You're like, oh, I'm global worldwide.
True success is global. You can't
stay in the box.
You can't just be inside and be a box-in thinker. I'm just going to do this in America.
No, I totally agree. And with all of that, all of your success and everything, what would...
And that's why I guess when you're truly, truly that way, you can't just think about what black people think about you.
That's true.
You can't. My first day of school for my students, every semester, you know what the first day we do? We go over the rules and regulations. Policy and procedures, and then I get their input because I think it's important to get your students' input. Like, what are some of the things they like to see? And, you know, they're my customer, and I realize that. But the next thing we do is we go over the demographics of America. I do that in my entrepreneurship courses.
Yes.
I do that in my music courses because most people don't know the demographics. They don't know it's 230 million white people. They don't know, and this is approximate, they don't know it's approximately 43 million black people, or approximately 60 million Hispanics, or 16 million Asians.
Wow.
And I do that because I want you to see, you can focus on 43 million people, or you can focus on 300 plus million people. It's your choice. Who do you want to focus on? So are you going to react to what 40 million people say about you, or are you going to react to what 230 million people say about you?
I agree. Oh, that was good. And just to know the demographics like that, you're right to look at that. That was good. That is a good thing to look at and to focus on and to change your thinking on a global, a more universal outlook.
So, because it's all about perspective. Life is about perspective, and what's your perspective of life, or what's your perspective about music, or what's your perspective about success and failure. Everybody has a different perspective. We're simply looking at and listening to my perspective. As an educator, I am open to always listening to others' perspective. I could learn something from somebody else's perspective. Yes. And so we often put our roadblock up. That's why when somebody says something negative, it doesn't affect me. I listen to their perspective and say, okay, do I agree with that or do I disagree with that?
Yes.
Did I learn something from their perspective? I might have learned something from somebody's perspective who don't agree with me or see me differently. So I've never been that kind of person, you know, like people paint this picture of me. They don't get to get inside like you do. And I don't want them to.
I agree. I
don't want them to, because if everybody
like
knew my
people, yeah.
But if everybody knew my secrets, then it would make it difficult to be successful.
Yeah, everybody can't get these good gems.
No, I would much. Sometimes I'm better off with people thinking I'm poor and
you need to stop.
You know, oily skin, and you know, I'm a bad person.
Aww,
you
know,
sometimes I'm better off with that.
Yeah.
Perspective. It allows me to bypass some things.
That's true. Or bypass some people. I agree.
That I don't want to be dealing with anyway.
Oh, that's true. Well, I'm really big on words of wisdom. Everyone I interview, I always ask, what is some type of words of wisdom, that some words that may have stuck with you, you know, throughout life that continue to come in your brain? Could be like 3-4 words, but just...
Oh, I got something in my head.
Some words. Oh, you do?
Oh, yeah. I want to share it.
Okay. But right now in his office, it is just so amazing, all these awards. Okay.
All
right. Okay.
I saw this on TV the other day, and I write it down.
Oh.
And this really, really, really touched me.
Okay.
Because most people don't know I've been married 4.5 years to this wonderful woman.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
And so when I saw this, and I saw this on TV, and it was actually Ronald Reagan who was saying it. There's nothing more important than approaching your own doorsteps and knowing someone on the other side of the door is listening for the sound of your footsteps.
Wow. I do like that.
Yeah. Love
it. Wow. I do love that.
Nothing more important than that. To get into your door and knowing somebody's on the other side excited about you opening that door.
That's true.
And that can be all sorts of doors.
That's true.
It could be the door of life, the door of your job, the door of a relationship, the door of your children.
Yep.
I'm going to say that one more time.
Okay, Eli, I'm going to say it one more time.
There's nothing more important than approaching your own doorsteps knowing someone on the other side of the door is listening for the sound of your footsteps.
Wow.
I'm Matthew Knowles. Please go to MatthewKnowles.com and order the DNA of Achievers. We didn't talk about racism from the eyes of a child, but that's now up on MatthewKnowles.com. You can follow me on my social media. If you go to MatthewKnowles.com, you'll understand the cities that I'm doing keynote speeches this year. You'll learn a lot, because we're doing hopefully some really good things here at Music World.
You guys are locked right here to JTV Journey to Victory. And that right there was Mr. Matthew Knowles, Journey to Victory. Make sure you guys press that subscribe button and keep it locked right here to JTV.